As was mentioned, my name is Paul Golden, and I've been here before. It's great to be back. Get myself situated here. I appreciate what Holly shared about the Pregnancy Resource Center here in the Southern Tier. We have a particular interest in that ministry because about 14 years ago, a young lady from Ohio made a choice to keep her baby. And that baby, through God's providence and through the ministry of a Pregnancy Resource Center, that baby, Jeremy Golden, ended up in our family. We were privileged to adopt him, and we're blessed that she chose life, and we're blessed to have ministries like the Pregnancy Resource Center. So I hope that you, after the service, sign up for the War Room, Men's Adventure, see Jeannie Vogel, but also make sure you get a bottle and support ministries like that, because they do make a difference, and they've impacted our life. As was mentioned, our son Jeremy was adopted 13 years ago yesterday. Our daughter was born. And if you have a parent of a teenage daughter or son, now we have officially two teenagers in the house. So you can add me to your prayer list. It's officially begun. So it's been a great privilege to be a parent. But we do need your prayers as teenagers have taken over our home. Several years ago, I was privileged to be invited to go to the country of the Philippines and speak at a small pastor's conference. A friend of mine from seminary was Filipino and is there ministering, and he invited me to come, and I was able to raise my money and buy the ticket. Well, that was the first big trip for me. I've flown a little bit before, but never that far by myself. I Googled how far it is from New York City to Manila, Philippines, and it's almost 8,491 miles, to be exact. So that was a long trip for me, a long flight, a long trip by myself. And I was excited to go on the trip and to minister and to interact with the Filipino brothers and sisters, but also a little bit apprehensive. I'm okay, going to make my trips. You know, I get to Manila. Are they going to find me? Am I going to get to where I'm supposed to go? So just thinking about it's an adventure, but also a little bit of trepidation. The trip went great, exhausted when you get there, you know, literally halfway around the world. It's about 12 hours difference there, and finally arrive and get there. And we traveled down from Manila. We left the city, which is a massive city. We went south of Manila to a Christian camp in the hills there. So I'm excited, you know, it's coming reality, and we're getting there. And then one of the pastors says, oh, you see that hills up there? There's some militant Muslims up in those hills. I'm like, oh. Good to know. Just a year before, if you remember the news back then, a Christian missionary, Martin and Gracia Burnham, had been kidnapped, not in that area, but farther south in Palawan in the Philippines. And if you remember that story, they were held captive for over a year. In an attempt to rescue them, Martin, the husband, was killed, but Gracia survived and was able to escape. So that was still on my mind, as was my wife's mind, as going there. So that the last thing I needed to hear was, oh, yeah. But don't worry about that. They won't cause any problem. Like, well, interesting for you to say. I'm 8,000 miles from home, and I don't know where the nearest embassy is. So that struck me that, you know, anxiousness and anticipation in the same trip. You know, at that point, hey, God, if you want me to minister successfully here, it's on your hands. If you want me to get kidnapped like the Burnhams, I guess I'm good with that too. But I just got to trust. Trust in you during my time here that you're in control. And will bring me safely to and from on this trip. As I thought about that, the Israelites maybe had a similar situation where they were filled with anxiousness and anticipation on a trip. And if you turn to Psalm chapter 121, the book of Psalms are located in the Old Testament. Near the end of the Psalms, there's 150 different Psalms. And today we're going to look at this one. A simple, short, 8-verse psalm. Just some background before we jump in. This is a psalm of ascents. There's 15 songs of ascents. Psalm 120 to 134 are fall into that category. And what does that mean? A song of ascents. A-S-C-E-N-T-S. Well, the Israelites, the pilgrims, would sing songs as they ascended, would go up to Jerusalem for their annual feast. Three times a year they would go up for the Feast of Passover, Pentecost, and the Feast of Booths. So there's songs that were sung by the Israelites as they traveled up to Jerusalem. And whether they're coming from the north or the south or the east or the west, If you've ever been to Jerusalem, it's located in the hills. So you would have to go up to Jerusalem regardless of your original site of the trip. The psalm, we don't know the author, it's not recorded, it's not given to us, but it was written to be sung by the Israelites. And you think, well, how difficult could it be? Is it a dangerous trip? Well, if you think back, if you grew up in church and remember the parable of the Good Samaritan, he was on his way up from Jericho, just down by the Jordan near the Dead Sea, going up to Jerusalem. I did some research. It's a trip of about 13 miles from Jericho up to Jerusalem. Jericho, as you know, it's about 1,100 feet below sea level. As I said, it's right near the Dead Sea, so it's 1,100 feet below sea level. To get up to Jerusalem, that's located about 2,600 feet above sea level. So if you add those two differences together, it's almost a difference of 3,700 feet. There is danger in the hills, as we know from the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? Robbers came, attacked them, and the parable was given. So even as pilgrims would go, there is a certain amount of like, this is a long trip. You know, are we going to be safe? What's the weather like? How dangerous is it be? Will the whole family be able to make it? There's a sense of anxiety coupled with anticipation. Look at Psalm 121. We'll jump in and kind of go verse by verse. It says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? The writer, the psalmist, is looking with either great anxiety or anticipation or both forward to this trip. You know, why the anxiety? Well, we mentioned robbers, maybe hiding in the hills. Why anticipation? Well, they're going up to the festival. They're going up to Passover. They're going up to Pentecost. There's anxiety and anticipation hidden among the hills. Also, when you think of hills, we think of safety. So we're not sure if the psalmist is looking at the hills like, okay, there's danger in the hills, or if he's looking at the hills, hey, there is safety. There is safety in Jerusalem as we go there, a potential refuge in the hills from danger. So the psalmist says, hey, I lift up my eyes. I'm looking at the hills. From where does my help come from? He answers that in verse 2. He says, my help comes from the Lord. You know, where is my protection? Where is my help? Where is my confidence? He says, my help comes from the Lord. Verse 2, the maker of the heavens and the earth. He asked himself, I guess, a rhetorical question, you know, where does my help come from? And in reassurance, he says, my help comes from the Lord. The psalmist affirms that his trust is in his creator, not only of the hills, but of the entire universe. Yahweh, the covenant God, has committed to provide help to his people. The maker of the heaven and earth. God is sovereign over all realms. He alone is God. One writer put it this way. Our sole source of help comes from God, our creator with unlimited power. So the very beginning, the songwriter says, hey, listen, I lift my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come from? My help, he says with confidence, my help comes from the Lord, the maker of those hills, the makers of the heavens and all the earth. Chuck Swindoll said this, nothing under his control can ever be out of control. And as the psalmist, as those pilgrims are going up to the hills, they're reminded again as they singing the song of ascent, I lift my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. And it's a reminder for us, nothing under his control can ever be out of control. Let's look at verse 3. He continues on with that theme. He says this, he, referring to God, will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. I'll stop there, but verses 3 through 6 here, the psalmist is remembering and reflecting on the promises of God. And you're going to see a key theme throughout that the guardian of Israel, God, is the guardian of every believer. The guardian of Israel is the guardian of every believer. And maybe you've come today and you're thinking, hey, God's not watching me. I'm going through a tough time. I'm an anxious moment. There's things that it seems like are out of control. But I trust today that through this study that you'll remember that not only is the God of Israel watching over Israel, but the God of Israel is the guardian of you. Verse 3, he says, he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. The idea behind he will not let your foot slip is that you will not slip or fall. And that would be very real to them as they're making their way, wherever they're coming from, to Jerusalem. No doubt they didn't have four-lane highways like we have, Route 86 going through Jericho to Jerusalem. But it was hard work. It was a long walk. There was danger inherent in the trip itself. But reminding them, hey, listen, he will not let you slip or fall. Then he says, he who watches over you will not slumber. Slumber is a fancy word. He will not nap. Your God will not doze off in momentary weakness and let you slip and fall. He will not let your foot slip. He will not slumber. Because he who watches over you is the God of Israel. I came across this illustration in an RBP book by Juanita Purcell. It says this: a number of years ago, the captain of an ocean liner was traveling from England to New York City with his family. One night the ship sailed into a violent storm that tossed the boat on its side and awakened everyone on the ship. Many passengers quickly dressed, expecting the worst. The captain's 8-year-old daughter was also awakened and asked the frightened family what had happened. They told her a squall had struck the ship. She asked if her father was on the deck, and they told her he was. The child laid her head on the pillow without fear and was sound asleep in a few minutes. Fear not the windy tempest wild. Thy bark they shall not wreck. Lie down and sleep, O helpless child, thy father's on the deck. Our Heavenly Father never slumbers or sleeps, so we can sleep in peace and perfect rest. He says, he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. And we could take assurance because our Heavenly Father never sleeps nor slumbers. We, as followers of Christ, can sleep in peace and perfect rest. Going down to verse 4, he continues, says, indeed, he who watches over Israel will never slumber nor sleep. Kind of reinforces what he just said in verse 3. Hey, listen, once again, he will not slumber, he will not sleep, for he watches over Israel. The idea that God is our guardian. Some translations have guardian or he who keeps, he who watches. It's the idea that God is our guardian. He watches over you. He protects and he guides. If you were to take a pen or a pencil and just go down, you'll see 5 different times the writer of the psalm uses watch. It says, he who watches, verse 3. Verse 4, indeed, he who watches. Verse 5, the Lord watches. Verse 7, he will watch. Verse 8, the Lord will watch. You can see a theme. 5 times he uses that key concept that God is our guardian. God is watching. And the idea behind that word in the Hebrew is it's an idea to guard, to protect, to attend, to preserve, to keep. A dictionary definition is of a guardian is a person who guards, protects, and preserves. A person who is entrusted by law with a care of another person. What the psalmist is saying, hey, listen, the God of Israel watches over Israel is the same God who watches over you. He keeps, he guards, he protects. He doesn't sleep, he doesn't slumber. God is your guardian. So he said guardianship is the theme of this passage, the repetition. If you look there in verse 3, it says, he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Then in verse 5, he does it more specifically. The Lord watches over you. Then back in verse 6 and 7, he will watch over your life. It's the idea of the repetition. There's symmetry that he who watches over you, he who watches over Israel, the Lord watches over you. The psalmist is really trying to focus in literary device there, but also reminding the reader, listen, it's emphasizing God's personal watch over you. He watches over you. He watches over Israel. He watches over you. God is our guardian. One commentator put it this way: the intensity of his care is amplified by the emphasis of his watchfulness. The intensity of his care is amplified by the emphasis of his watchfulness. You can see that theme where he says, once again, he never sleeps, you know, soundly or lengthy. He never slumbers momentarily. You know, there's a difference between a nap you go home this afternoon and you fall asleep and you're lazy boy, that's maybe a short nap, nodding off. But then there's when you're at the end of an exhausting day, it's 11 o'clock at night, your four kids have all been sick, crazy day, when your head hits a pillow, you are out. There's different types of sleep. The psalmist is saying, listen, the God of Israel, your guardian, neither slumbers nor sleeps, neither cat naps nor sleeps soundly, because he is always watching, protecting, and keeping you. He never sleeps. He never slumbers. It's the idea that God is not indifferent to us or will not disregard us. God is always there to help, since he is the shepherd of Israel. If you're familiar with Psalm 23, the Lord is our shepherd. The whole idea of that is God is our shepherd, the protector, the keeper, our guardian. It's interesting, in that time, the pagans permitted their gods to sleep. But the God of Israel is not like any other God. I think the psalmist is trying to reinforce that your God does not slumber. He does not sleep. He will not let your foot slip. He is the maker of heaven. He will watch. Five times, he watches. He will watch. God is our guardian. So I said, the guardian of Israel is the guardian of every believer. Looking at verses 5 and 6, continuing the theme, the Lord watches over you. It gets more personal. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. It's the idea here where the guardian, the guy who watches, the God who watches you, is a shade for us. Think about the hot sun of that climate in Israel. He shades us from the dangers of the day, the sun, the extreme heat from dehydration. Contrast that with at evening time, the moon. At night there, it can get real cold. So the writer is reminding those of us who are singing the song or reading it now that he protects us from all extremes, the sun and extreme heat in the day and the cold at night. It's the idea of constant protection. So the guardian of Israel is the guardian of every believer, and he protects us. And it's the idea of his constant protection. I like where it says there at the end of verse 5, the Lord is your shade at your right hand. It's the idea of proximity, that closeness. It's not a distant God where you have to wait on him, but he is close. He is present. His proximity to us, daytime, nighttime, in all of our travels. I won't tell you what year I went to kindergarten, but it wasn't recently. It was, my dad at the time, we were living over in the big city of Breezeport. I grew up in downtown. I consider myself a city boy. We grew up in 235 Church Street, downtown Breezeport. And at the time, my brother and I would come over here to Horseheads Christian School. I'm thankful for the ministry of HCS over the years. And I didn't find this out till later, but on my first day of school, right, kindergarten, my parents, you know, I got the backpack, I got the lunchbox. They put me on the bus at the bus stop, right? I'm excited, I'm riding the bus. You know, it's not that long a trip from Breezeport over the hill to Grand Central Avenue here. I found out several years later that, unbeknownst to me, that very first day of school, my parents put me on the bus and they stand at the thing waving. I'm sure my mom was tearing up, waving goodbye. I think my mom was happy, my mom was sad, my dad was happy. But I found out later that as soon as I got on the bus, they ran, jumped in the car, followed the bus the entire way to HCS. Like what? And now that I'm a parent, I understand what they mean. We did the same thing with our two kids. But I had no idea at the time. I didn't find out until I think I was in high school that they did that. And you think about that, and you think about the Lord is your shade at your right hand. The idea of closeness and proximity. I was making the trip by myself, man. I was in kindergarten. I'm coming to HCS full time. I had no idea that they were right behind the bus, making sure the bus got there, making sure I got off. I think that's the biggest concern, I got off here, not some other school. But their idea that they were right behind me, their closeness, their love for me, making sure I got where I needed to be. I think the idea, it's maybe a weak illustration, but the idea of what God is, our guardian, he watches over us. The Lord is our shade. He is close to us. We are at his right hand. The idea of constant protection. Then in verses 7, it continues, kind of summarizes this short song. It says, the Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch, is that word again, watch over you, your coming and your going. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. It's interesting, kind of almost summarizes what we've studied in the previous verses. As I read this, I thought it was interesting. Verses 3 through 6, it's the idea that he watches right now. It's kind of the present tense. He watches now. Look at verse 3. It says, he who watches. It's the idea of right now. Verse 4, indeed, he who watches. Verse 5, the Lord watches. It's the idea of he currently, presently, right now, is watching over you. But then in verses 7 and 8, it turns to a future tense. Verse 7, he says, he will watch over your life. Verse 8, the Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forever. The writer of the psalm is reminding us again, a new emphasis of his watch, that is not only right now, but from now and continually through the future, present and future. And the new emphasis of his watch from present to future. It's the idea that he will guard your going out and your coming in. That's just a figure of speech saying, in everything you do, from morning till night, from the time you get out of bed to the time you go to bed, and while you're in bed sleeping, 24/7, God is watching. God is protecting. You're going out and you're coming in. One commentator put it this way, the psalmist has built up the conclusion that the Lord is present to deliver now and forevermore. And I hope, for me, as I read this and studied this, I hope it's a great encouragement to you. What great comfort and confidence we can have as followers of Jesus Christ that despite things that might happen to us, despite maybe unemployment, upcoming surgery, a tragedy, whatever it might be, that God, the guardian of Israel, is our guardian and he watches over us. The Lord's care extends to all adversities as he is sovereign over all the affairs of our life. One writer put it this way, the successful journey of the Psalm 121 pilgrim becomes a parable for the whole of one's life in which the faithful, the follower of Christ, can be confident of God's tireless care. Doesn't mean we'll be exempt from the storms of life. Doesn't mean we're exempt from cancer, from unemployment, from tragedy, from autism, from Alzheimer's, you name it. But it's reassuring to know that our God watches over. He's intimately involved in our life. He is at our right hand. He protects us. His proximity to us is there. And because he is our guardian, we can have confidence in our all-powerful, ever-watchful God. If you're taking notes, man, I want to write this next phrase. I want you to take this be your takeaway from today. God watches over you all the time, in every circumstance and forever. You're facing a rough week. You're facing a tough month. You're facing a tough life. Be reminded that God watches over you all the time in every circumstance, both now and forever. This past summer, we took a few vacation days and we took the family down to the New Jersey shore. We went to Long Beach Island. It was the week of July 4th. Of course, a lot of people take vacation that week because of that's the Independence holiday for us. And we were on Long Beach Island up by Harvey Cedars. And if you know anything about Long Beach Island, it's an island that sticks off the coast of New Jersey. So you're farther out and it's a great beach. We were there with some friends and just a busy, obviously July 4th week. The beach was packed, beautiful weather. And I'm not much of a beach guy, so my wife and I and our friends are sitting up in the chairs on the beach and the kids are playing in the sand, building sandcastles, going out, kind of doing body surfing. So we're kind of keep, you know, as a concerned parent, our eyes are always on them wherever they go. And obviously the waves is tough and the water's pulling you to the side a little bit or farther out. Anyways, I look up, I can't find Jeremy. I can't find Caleb, his friend. But, you know, I've done that before. Okay, oh, they just got drifted over here. There they are. But this time it was different. We couldn't find them. So I say to my friend, hey, I don't see Caleb and Jeremy. Oh, they're probably all right. So I get a little more concerned, so I finally get up off the chair and start kind of walking towards the beach. I still can't see it. Lots of people in the water. There's lifeguards there, just a lot of activity on the beach, but also in the water. I still can't see him. Of course, earlier in the week, there's signs up, hey, this is a riptide area. And because of where it's located, I don't understand all the dynamics, but it's a riptide area. There's four lifeguards there. They know it's a difficult, dangerous beach. But yet, humanly speaking, I'm watching them wherever they go. But for about a minute there, we could not find Jeremy and Caleb. My heart's, you just feel your heart beating. You're thinking, oh no, what if he died? What if he drowned? I'll never forgive myself. I can't imagine losing our son. So it seemed like it was 5 minutes, but it was probably only a minute. But for that minute, just panic. In the meantime, unbeknownst to me, the lifeguard was already out, already on a surfboard, already out to where Jeremy, Caleb, and another adult male had got sucked out by the riptide. They did everything right. They didn't fight it. They just got sucked out. They were way out there. And before I even knew, realized that they were lost, the lifeguards already had them on the board, bringing them back in. Whew. Man, what a relief. What a scary moment. I went to talk to the lifeguard that was an older man that was in charge of the younger four men that were the lifeguards. He said, hey, they were never in danger. He said, this area is known to be a riptide area. We got our best lifeguards out here. They're watching all the time. They were never in danger. And I was like, yeah, easy for you to say. I lost track of them. He thought the worst. And I think about that, and as I read Psalm 121, thank God, our God, is always on duty, never misses a beat. He constantly watches. He's constantly close. Just like those lifeguards knew exactly what was going on, went out, got Jeremy, Caleb, and the adult male, and brought them back in. Our God, the guardian of Israel, is the guardian of every believer. If you're familiar with Hebrews 13:5, God reminds the readers, the writer of Hebrews reminds the readers there of a passage from Deuteronomy. It says this, I will never leave you nor forsake you. The God who watches. And maybe today you needed this encouragement from the song of ascent that, hey, whether it's anxiousness or anticipation or both, our God watches. Listen as I reread the psalm and we'll close with that. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of the heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. Let's close in prayer. Dear Lord, to think back to Jeremy and Caleb, I'm thankful that you, in your sovereignty, had a lifeguard there to rescue them in the midst of that riptide current. Lord, as I think about my own life, I'm thankful that you sent the ultimate lifeguard, your son, Jesus Christ, to come to earth as a baby, as we celebrate at Christmas, to live a sinless, perfect life and have 3.5 years of ministry, but ultimately that so that he would die on the cross, be buried 3 days, and to rise again, to conquer the grave, to conquer sin and death, so that we might, if we accept your free gift, have a personal relationship with you and live with you eternally. Thank you that you rescued us in our situation. Lord, today I'm sure there's people here that are wondering, is God really watching? Does God even really care about your situation? Lord, I pray today that through this message that the psalmist reminds us that you are always watching, that you are always there in the good times of life and the bad times of life. Help us once again to trust in your guardianship of our lives. We thank you, Lord, that you watch over us all the time in every circumstance, both now and forevermore. Thank you, Jesus, in your name.